Part 3, Chapter 4, in which Harvey enters college and Prometheus goes into the woods. The eastern sky was already white, and the rising sun had lightened the streets and houses of the city, when Harvey was roused by the song of birds. They were not the birds of Leucadia, and it would take time before he could anticipate their melodies in the half-light of slumber. But he felt they accepted him, and were welcoming him into their home. There was also a squirrel in the tree, whom Harvey recognized as the one he had followed days before. The rodent was curious about the overgrown intruder, and asked him many questions, all of which the captain answered to satisfaction. And when he was convinced Harvey had come in peace, he invited him to share a breakfast of nuts and berries. As soon as they were finished, Harvey took his leave and descended the tree. When he stepped out of the cemetery, he ran into Hesiod on the way to school. "Arrgh!" growled the captain when he found out where they were going. "Meum cerebrum tabula rasa est." It was a short walk to the university, and Harvey was bursting with excitement when they reached the campus. Unfortunately, his enthusiasm quickly turned to gloom when they entered Orson Spencer Hall. The corridors were dark and dreary, pressed upon from above by a ceiling that was rotted and stained, and from below by a floor that was broken and worn. "What class do you have?" said Hesiod, following the walls with his hands. "First quarter Greek," said Harvey. "First quarter Greek," said Hesiod. "So do I." They continued down the halls, turning always to the left, until they came to a door and Hesiod turned the knob. The room was in shadow, but they could make out a number of students in the back rows, filling the seats with their rigid and expectant forms. The newcomers found places near the front and quietly sat down. "Do you think he'll come?" Hesiod whispered to one of the others. "I don't know," said the silhouette of a student. "He missed the entire first week." "What'll we do if he doesn't?" said Hesiod. "We'll come back tomorrow," said the student. "And the day after?" said Hesiod. "Possibly," said the student. "The point is, until he comes," said Hesiod. "Exactly," said the student. Just then the professor burst in and switched on the lights. "Kallo," he said, storming to the front of the class. He set down his books, paused, and preferring not to speak his name, he wrote it on the board. Translation of Kallo: good. The sudden illumination startled the students, but it was nothing next to the hurricane of Greek that flew from the professor's mouth. He pointed to the windows and commented on the day outside. He turned to the students and asked questions which he answered himself. He laughed and gesticulated. He paced in front of the board. He fiddled with the podium. He fumbled through his notes. Then he pulled out a pen and began to call roll. The students were stunned. "This must be the wrong class," thought Harvey, echoing the thoughts of the others. "I've got to get out of here." The door was less than 14 feet away, and he could picture his hand on the knob. But before he could move, another student beat him to it. "I'm in the wrong class," muttered the young man, darting for the door. For a moment his hand held the roundness of the knob, and he was almost outside when the professor stopped him. "First quarter Greek," said the professor, laughing and pronouncing his first words of English. "Don't be alarmed. I always begin this way." Everyone in the room considered dropping the course, then realized it was already the second week and they would never get into another class. Harvey, with an insight gleaned from the mind of the instructor, suddenly understood his earlier absence. To the surprise of all, the students quickly grew accustomed to the chaos of sound. They didn't understand any of it, of course. but in less than a day they began to recognize individual syllables, and, combining two of them, they formed their first word, Ewo. Translation, I. Alone and without meaning, Ego was forced to wait until Esu could join it and other words were born between them. Esu, you. So the two words are I and you. Then the stage filled quickly as the students began to name things, and by the end of a week, a new world had been born. The class was remarkably intelligent, but no student drew more attention than the captain, responding to perfection when answering the professor, but stammering like a two-year-old when being addressed by a student. The same held true for all of his classes. In art history, which Harvey attended with Thales, he was a virtual textbook of knowledge. In creative writing, which he attended with Anaximenes, he articulated the teacher's philosophy more eloquently than the professor herself. And in American literature, which he attended with Prometheus, he embarrassed the professor by correcting him on the biography of Henry David Thoreau. His classmates soon began to seek his help with their coursework, and Harvey offered it gladly, reflecting their ideas back to them with the confidence to express them correctly. Footnote. The author, in an interview with Buck Lee, July 24, 2005, recalls the excitement of those years. It was a time of great discovery, being exposed to the greatest artists and thinkers of the past. But it was also a time of turmoil, for as the universe expanded from the familiar confines of our neighborhood, we had our first taste of insignificance in the face of the vast history of time. As with many teenagers, there was the narcissistic attraction to existentialist thinkers and writers, and we reveled in the uneasy excitement we found in Kafka and Dostoevsky. But we were far too young, and our surroundings far too secure, to understand the seriousness of what we read. Back to the text. By the end of his first week, Harvey was considered by all to be a model student. But when he left his last class on Friday, he was ready to party. On the way home, he heard what sounded like the echo of an axe in the mountains, and followed it to the backyard of a large two-story house where a man was chopping wood. It was Prometheus, who was singing as he worked. There once was a fellow from Sparta, a really magnificent farter. On the strength of one bean, he'd fart, God save the Queen, and Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. Arf! Said Argos. Argos! Barked Harvey. A burnt offering! Cried Prometheus, when he recognized his friend. The offering was made as Prometheus led the captain to the woods at the back of his yard. What do you think? Said Prometheus. Whatever you think, said Harvey. No, said Prometheus, I mean about my cabin. I just finished it today. Harvey walked up to the small wooden structure and put his hand on one of the eaves. It looks like you, he said. Just then it began to rain, and the two men and their dog ducked through the door. The captain had never seen his friend from the inside before, and he was impressed by what he saw. Prometheus was quaint but well-built, and everything seemed to be in its place. The only thing that concerned Harvey were all the empty bottles of Irish whiskey. The rain began to beat harder on the roof, and Prometheus decided to build a fire. In no time he had one burning, and as the chimney began to draw out the smoke, he settled down on the floor with his dog. Argos melted beneath his master's touch, and Prometheus continued to caress him, moving hypnotically, unconsciously, painting the animal's redness with his sap-stained hand. The captain was mesmerized by the fire, and when the logs began to whistle and pop, he imagined he could hear the cries of a forsaken child, or the cracking of a whip, or the sighs of an impassioned lover. It was as if the fire had a story to tell, and Harvey was its listener. But the fire was not the only one with a story, for the rain on the roof was falling harder and harder, telling a tale of its own, and as the drops sprinkled down the chimney, the flames leapt to meet them, embracing them with a steamy kiss. When the rain and fire were spent, Harvey and Prometheus left for the treehouse lounge.